All right, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst, Mike Johnson. Johnny, I don't know how to segue and back into the Sid chat, but do you think, you know, if you look into the future 3 years from now, and since it said today he wants to play at least three more years, do you think the Olympic Games are a part of that discussion for him? How important do you think that would be for him?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it would be something for him to aspire to achieve, like, you know, at his age, with what he's done 2 years from now, what would be motivating him other than his competitive spirit, trying to win the Stanley Cup, of course. But the idea of maybe trying to make another Olympic team, to play with all these, to play with McDavid, to play with these generational players below him. Yeah, I mean, I think that would be something that would pique his interest. And he played well enough to deserve a spot on it this year. I heard you guys talking. Bergeron absolutely played well enough. Metrically speaking, it was his greatest defensive year of his career, Jesus, which is saying something.
Right.
Not offensively, but defensively, he's never been better, which is crazy if he's going to walk away at that level. But, yeah, I think Sid, 3 years from now, he's 37. It'd be a challenge, but we've looked silly doubting Sidney Crosby before.
So, Johnny, I don't know why we started with the Olympics, but we got to get to the nuts and bolts of this convo, pal. Leafs are running it back. If Mike Johnson was the president of the Leafs, do you agree with what's going on? Do you see it continuing? Are they actually running it back, or what changes would you make?
So I think we talked about this before, and I thought it would head in this direction. You know, that they would likely not make significant changes. The team was very good. They played a good team and they lost in game seven. They have to wear their history, honestly, but I think they're going to change the team. But if you're going to stick with Sheldon Keefe, and I think Keefe's quite a good coach, and getting better and has improved, I think that's one conversation that I could at least see happening. Not that Sheldon's not a good coach, but would they be better served just for something different at this point because of their history? That's a conversation I could see worth having. It looks like they've had it. They're going to keep Sheldon. I get why they would. I don't think they're going to trade any of those top four guys, but there will be a half dozen, seven, eight changes on this team, and I think that's pretty significant for a team that's as good as Toronto was this past year. The goaltending situation is going to have to be sorted out. I don't know where to go with Campbell. I'd go to Noodles, my goaltending expert. Okay, do we trade Mrazek and try to re-sign Campbell to 5x5, or do we let Campbell walk and just go with Mrazek in the meantime?
5x5? Who's giving him 5x5? He's 30 years old, and you don't know what
Detroit.
The hell he's going to bring to the table.
Yeah, Detroit's going to give him 5x5.
Then go ahead and get it in Detroit.
Well, but that I believe that number because that's what Robin Leonard got. And to me, that's where Jack Campbell's, that's probably his closest comparable, is a guy who's not a 65-game starter, but he's not a 30-game guy. Now he's pushed through. He played 49 games this year. I think he's a tandem guy, and that's what tandem guys are getting. He's not getting Markstrom's contract or Hellebuck's contract, but he's not going to get below that. I think it's something, you know, it's 5x5, 5x4, you know, and a free agent. He can go where he wants to be.
Yeah, so you have to figure that out because you're not bringing them both back, right? You're not going to have a $4 million starter and a $4 million backup. That makes no sense financially. I think what they need to do, though, and my priority would be to sort out the defense. And I think, Morgan Riley has a no-move clause. He just signed that. Would they be well-served to explore that? Maybe, because they would probably get great value there. But I don't think they're going to do that. So I think they need to kind of rejig their defense as best they can. Which might be hard given their contracts and no move protection and everything else, but I think that's where the focus is. Figure out how to round out the rest of your roster because they don't have much money to spend on it, but that's probably where they're at, and that's probably the most sensible thing to do. I know it's not what fans want. I know people want change because, like, how could you not want change when all they ever do is lose the biggest game that they have to win? But I don't know if they get better making change for change's sake.
Well, Hayes brought this up. Change for change's sake doesn't make sense. It's not even applicable here. It's change because you don't get by the first round.
Right. It's not just changing for the sake of change to appease
exactly.
loudmouths out there yelling and screaming. You're changing mm-hmm. because you realize you keep failing.
You know, right, but I guess what I'm saying, Hayes, is that change for improvement as opposed to change, you know, being forced to change even if you're not sure if it's going to take your team and make them better. You know what I mean? If you're going to make personnel changes, you don't want to trade away an asset for an asset that's going to be slightly less productive for you, but you're doing it because you need to make a change in the components. Of, you know what I mean? I think right. that's where what I'm referring to. I mean, I get changes and I get reason why you're having this conversation, but I just don't know how you get better with some of the change with the way their team's constructed, the players they have. Like, could you trade William Nylander for somebody and get a pretty good player? But I'm not sure your team gets better if you do that.
Well, let me ask you, sorry, Brian, just quickly, because I want to follow on this. You just mentioned, like, a William Nylander for somebody, a very good player. What if it's just the dynamic, a player that just has a different, you know, still a point producer, still a guy. He might not get 35 goals, but maybe he's a 30 and 30. He's a 60-point guy, but plays a little bit more physical or just a different type of player. Is that something that you explore if they are in the same contract stratosphere and, you know, age and all of that type of stuff?
Yeah, you explore everything. I mean, you're not going to say no to anything. You're going to look at everything. Right. But like, I guess, Noodles, what I'm saying is, who is that? And I'm not going to put you on the spot and say, like, no, come up with a guy. But like what guy who makes $6 or $7 million is a, you know, beastly, physical, gritty, playoff-proven, 30-goal, 30-assist guy? Like, there's not a lot of those guys out there. So that's the problem. Like, don't trade him for Josh Anderson because Josh Anderson's big and burly,
no.
And you want to get a guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's the conversation where I'm at. If there's something that makes sense, then yeah. Like, I don't think anyone warrants guarantees at this point. They don't.
Right. Right.
But I think the changes that people like to talk about, I'm not sure they're feasible or they would be easily to execute.
Well, that's the issue with having these hypotheticals, is because we don't know the other players involved, you know. So
right.
it always comes off as this, you know, borderline personal attack on individual players or coaches, GMs, presidents, or whatever. And because you don't have the flip side of the coin, you can't really even preview what it would look like or how it would project to be different. So that makes it very difficult until after they actually were to make a deal. Then you can evaluate it and get a read on it. But there's a few different things that I would take from this discussion. One, I kind of get the impression, like, if you bring it back, what they're saying is Shanahan, ultimately, he makes all the calls, is that they're averse to risk at this point. And I understand why, because of the calculation that you can get to where you say, if we bring back the same team, we probably finish with 110 points, guarantee ourselves back in, and go back to a game 7 and hope it works, right? Mm-hmm. Where if you change ingredients, maybe you finish with 98 points and you don't get in, or, you know, like that. I kind of get the impression like that is where the stalemate is, where they look at it and say, yeah, we can't get over the top, but if we bring back the same team, they're going to get back again and they're going to take a crack at it. So we'll risk the idea of being embarrassed again if they can't do it, as opposed to taking a big swing that might lead to a big miss. And that, to me, sounds like they're almost playing scared. You know, like, it's not even that they're fully committed to this working. It's that they're fully committed to it's going to give them a chance to maybe work, because that's what has happened for 6 years. And I don't know if that's always a wise way to manage.
No, I'm with you. What if I phrase it? I don't know if they're playing scared, but maybe they're playing smart, right? Like, they could roll the dice and absolutely it could work out great, or could work out poorly, but they're running the probabilities. What are the chances? What are the chances of us doing well again with the same group and getting ourselves back into the first round and another chance to win a series and then finally winning it versus making significant changes, whether it's players, coaches, management, and then having that same probability of getting back to the first round and having a better result? If you come up and you run that however you want to, and you say it's more likely we win a playoff round, bringing everyone back, than it is if we don't. Is that playing scared, or is that just playing smart?
Well, again, it's tough to come up with that calculation when this team has six, you know, blanks, where the other one is just right. 0 for 0. You know, but
right.
I understand what you're saying, and I guess this is how we established it earlier, Johnny. If Shanahan, Dubas, Keefe, the big four up front, Riley, Muzzin, Brody, Campbell, if they all return, how is there any change of significance? You know, like, aren't we just talking about the periphery that happens with teams 1 through 32? You know, like, effectively, if the same skeleton is back, then really they are running it back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they will. I mean, the goaltender is a significant part of it.
Of course.
But, you know, that's the one other. But whether it's Mrazek or Campbell, I guess you could argue it's, you know, that's not changing the personality, the fabric of the team so much as it would be if it was one of those other guys that you just mentioned or the management trio that have been there the whole time. So, yeah, I think it is. And I guess that's what they believe that they'll get there again and have it work again. I understand it. And it's also, we also have to factor, it's not easy to make significant changes other than the coach. That's the only conversation. Like, you know, I know Barry Trotz is doing this during the interview circuit. Apparently he was in Winnipeg today. Like, I could understand, like, should we talk to Barry Trotz? What would that look like? What would that mean to our team, even if we kept the same players? Because that's at least easier to do and pull off as opposed to, you know, what we're going to try to find a way to trade Jake Muzzin, which I don't think is a terrible idea, but I don't know if they can do that. We're going to try to find a way to trade William Nylander. That would be a lot easier, but it's not going to make us better. Like, those are less feasible to pull off to great success than maybe just changing the coach for another coach that you really know what he's like. So, and I'm not advocating for Sheldon to lose his job. I think Sheldon Keefe's actually a very good coach, and I would not, Trotz I would talk to, but I don't know if I'd talk to anybody else who's out there, given how well the team has performed in the regular season under Sheldon Keefe.
Johnny, I mean, this is where, you know, when you're talking about it, and O just brought it up, like, and hey, 0-6 in their last, you know, 6 years in the first round. You know, the Leafs are a giant brand, correct? Like, I mean, one of the biggest brands in the world. So let me ask you this. If the Cowboys, the Rangers, and for the New York Rangers, because we know that owner is a little bit unique, we'll call it, the Yankees, like, those are some of the biggest brands on the earth, correct? And who's the biggest brand in soccer?
Manchester United, okay. Real Madrid, you know, whatever it
is. So if any one of these organizations were having this type of, you know, success or non-success in the secondary, you know, in the playoffs, would it be status quo? Or, I mean, can you imagine how loud it would be in those markets? Like, I know it's different. You can say, hey, we're close and great regular seasons, but, you know, in knowing what we know about pro sports, how, you know, how unique is this situation that you're allowed to continue to run it back?
It's a fair point, Noodles, and it's a good one, because in just about no other place, no other sport would you keep getting more opportunities. I don't know. Hayes, aren't you a Green Bay fan? Like, Aaron Rodgers, they keep losing. They don't get to the Super Bowl. Now, they win a game, and I get it's different. They win a game, but, you know, they're not getting the Super Bowl when they keep having home field, and it just keeps happening. I think Sidney Crosby's team has just lost four times in the first round in the last 4 years. Like, it's hard. Now, I know they've won, so it doesn't matter. Nobody thinks about that, but, you know, Washington's won several or lost several first rounds in a row. I know they just won 4 years ago. So it's tricky. Edmonton, for all their greatness out there, they just won their second time in the 7 years that Connor McDavid's been there. Hockey's a different sport than those other sports.
I agree.
I factor that in. But you're right. You're right. And if the bottom line was hurting, if fans were so frustrated that they didn't show up or whatever, then they probably would be forced to be more aggressive than this incredibly long view patient exercise they're undertaking. I don't know. And I think also the ownership structure of the Maple Leafs lends itself to this because there is no emotional singular man or woman owning the Leafs that'd be like, get rid of everybody because you're so upset. It's Bell, it's Rogers. And it's Larry Tannenbaum, who is not, you know, a reactionary kind of guy. He's actually a pretty nice guy as an owner. So all those things factor into it. But the Leafs might be unique in that way because they keep getting the support. They keep selling out. They keep, you know, getting, you know, sponsorships and sweet deals and everything else despite them not having playoff success.
The thing I don't understand, Mike, and I'll challenge you on this, you say you can't do this and you can't do that, and it'd be stupid to do this. What's the risk of taking a swing and doing something different? What are you afraid you're going to lose in the first round? That's what you've been doing anyway. So what are you afraid of?
You're afraid of not making the first round or giving yourself a much worse chance of being successful in that first round. That's what you're afraid of.
And they just had home ice advantage with game seven. What else are they looking for?
They're looking for the same opportunity again. What if they don't have home ice in the first round?
Oh, so what? They lose. They've lost 5 years in a row.
Right, but there is no guarantee in the NHL, and you know that. And so they're looking to give themselves the best chance. There is no guarantee at all that they're going to get through the first round, even if they have a good team with a different... Nothing is guaranteed to any team.
I know. I'm just saying, I don't know what the fear is. Like, it's a lot, first round loss 5 years in a row. What the hell?
I wouldn't describe it as fear. I would just describe it as they taking a very meticulous look at everything and say, okay, if we keep this same direction headed, and I don't want to throw numbers on it, but like you could say, we're going to walk in the first round and we're going to have a 65% chance of winning. That doesn't mean they're going to win, but they have a good chance of winning. Or we could do all these changes. We walk in the first round and we have a 22% chance of winning. They may end up winning the first round. But I guess what they're saying and what I could appreciate is, like, we'd rather roll into the playoffs, however we look, with a 65% chance to win the first round as opposed to a 38% chance. That's the calculation. It's not about numbers, but I'm just putting them out there to make the analogy. That's the conversation they're having. What's going to give us the best chance to be successful? Even with our shoddy, terrible, historically, mathematically improbable failures in these elimination games, if the best chance to be successful next year is with a similar looking setup, then I get why they would go with a similar looking setup.
I guess that's why you talk about metrics and I talk about lasagna, bud. I guess that's the difference.
Metrically speaking, your lasagna per 60 is off the charts, man. Don't ever forget that.
I've got one like more. I agree. Like if you're sitting there going, okay, we got X amount of chance to do this. We like our team. We just think we're that close. We're going to give it another run. I also feel like a guy like Brendan Shanahan, this is something that always been perplexed me. Like the way that he played, the way that, you know, he is, you can tell he's a lot like Cam Neely. I think he's very, you know, emotional, but he hides it very well. He's very put together. Don't you think that a guy like Shanny would be looking at some nights and some efforts and some way, the way that some guys play it, and his head is going to explode off of his body just because he would either want more, he would want a different style, a different thought process?
I don't know, Jamie. I hear what you're saying. I don't look at things metrically or my percentage chance of winning, because all I know is in Game 7, the Tampa Bay Lightning said, we're going to do whatever it takes to win this hockey game. We lost our best player. We got the best goalie in net. If we got to win it 2-1, there wasn't a calculator. It wasn't anything else. They just said, we're going to do whatever it takes to win. Sorry, maybe I'm a dinosaur and I'm a moron.
You're not O, but like, so the
no,
team
I know
that
you
lost,
it was just a little saying.
I'll give you confirmation you're not. But you lost in the finals, did you not?
Sure did.
Did you not want it bad enough?
Pardon?
Did you not want it bad enough?
Well, we couldn't get the puck off Detroit.
so you just weren't as good.
That's right.
Sometimes that happens. So the Leafs weren't as good.
But the talent they have, Johnny, it'd be tough to say with the talent that they have that they're not as good.
But let me jump in there because there's two things on that. If they're not good enough, then why would they be good enough next year with the exact same team? Like, there's the answer. If they're not good enough, then, like, what do you think? Tampa's not waiting for them next year? Florida? Carolina? Boston? Yeah. Like, they're all waiting for them. So if you're not good enough, then there's your answer. And if you're also on the flip side of that is, Shanahan's been here for 8 years, and he runs into a team in the first round, and he can't build a team that's good enough for the first round? Then what are we doing here for 8 years?
Well, I mean, I guess they had a team that was good enough. Against Columbus, against Montreal, they just played. I was going to swear there. They played poorly.
Yeah, they did.
but I think this year they played really well. They ran into a team that was really good, a two-time defending champ, and maybe you know, there are elements of their game that were not good enough, or that it's just a coin toss. It's hard. Like, you know, it's hard to separate this year from the previous five or six, and I don't think you should, but, you know, you kind of do look at each one individually, and this one is different. And I don't know if they say they're not good enough to get through Tampa, but they played hard and do well. I guess I'm just saying the idea that somehow one team in Tampa did everything they could to win and one team in Toronto wasn't willing to, I think that does a disservice to every team that loses a game seven. Did Dallas not do everything they could to win? Did they not want it as bad as Edmonton? Like, I don't think that's the difference is want.
It just seems like, Johnny, what we're applying here is it's just the participation medal, where it's like it's morphed into pro sports now. It's like, oh, hang on a sec. Come on. They look good this year. They tried. There was better effort. So it's like, and I don't want anybody to get fired. I like everybody down there. On a personal level, they do a good job. But it's just like we're at that point where we're just saying it's grade two soccer, where it's like, oh, good job, you know.
Blue and white disease.
It's like that kid mentality with all these nut job parents that are like, oh, don't run up the scoreboard on my kid. Everyone just, you know, here's a participation badge. That's gone into pro sports now. That's the way we're acting. It's, I don't know.
Well,
I mean, I don't think they helped themselves with the "we were more well respected this year."
It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Like, I think that came off hollow, but I think he backed it up with, like, although respect means garbage because we didn't win, and that part is correct. I hear you. They're in a tough spot, and I think this conversation is a similar conversation that they're had. I know Shanny a little bit, you know, just haven't seen him around. His kid play volleyball with my niece and whatever. And, like, he burns hot, but make no mistake, like, his vision is in part of this team. Like, the way that Kyle Dubas builds a team, the way that Sheldon Keefe coaches it, the way that they play is Shanny's. So while he was a killer as a player, physical and tough and everything else, like, this team is his team. And so he's on board with all that they're going on, even though, like everybody, I'm sure he gets frustrated at times.
Yeah, well, we'll leave it there. We'll see what they've got. You know, we're not going to know for a number of weeks, you know, a couple of months before the action really starts. Second round beginning tonight. We'll start breaking that down later this week. Thank you, Johnny.
All right, boys. Enjoy your lasagna tomorrow.
Yes, we will. Don't you worry about that. There's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's red tag days. Visit MapleToyota.com.
My own brother is falling into the problem.